Spencer here, broadcasting live from the Mobile Kintec Studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Continue to send your thoughts in. We're going to hear from Evander Kane momentarily, speaking to the media at Rogers Arena for the first time since being acquired by the Vancouver Canucks. Before we go to Rogers, I want to remind everyone again, we are live on location at the Richmond Andrew Sherritt location for the big Milwaukee event today. There's the Say Cheese grilled cheese food truck here. They got free chips, free drinks, and just tons of great Milwaukee gear on sale. You can see some live demos. You can explore cutting-edge tool technology and take advantage of exclusive one-day-only deals and special offers. And, hey, how about this? If you spend $50 or more, you get a free grilled cheese from the Say Cheese food truck. So it's a blast. There's tons of people coming by. I see a lot of Milwaukee gear being moved already, so don't miss out. Come on down. Check it out. Go hands-on and score a great deal on some new Milwaukee gear at Andrew Sherritt in Richmond. And come say hi if you're out and about as well. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And continue to send your thoughts in about what's next for the Vancouver Canucks. We are now just a hair over 24 hours away from the beginning of the NHL entry draft, and the Canucks still holding the 15th overall pick, and it might come down to the wire to see if they're going to actually step up to the podium and make that selection or not. Or not them, they're not going to step up, but if somebody will step up on their behalf to the podium and make the selection, it remains to be seen. At 1:30, we're going to chat with Jason Buchla, get his thoughts on how the draft might unfold and also his thoughts on the Evander Kane deal, which, as you gave us a little preview off the top of the show, Drance, doesn't sound like Buchs is a super big fan of the trade that the Canucks made for Evander Kane.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. But always enjoy getting Buchs' perspective on the deals the Canucks are making and the players they are acquiring. How much do you, just before we get to hearing from Evander Kane here, one of the angles on this deal that we haven't really discussed, but I've seen out there a lot, is the they're throwing the Oilers a lifeline. They're throwing the division rival a lifeline here by acquiring Evander Kane. I tend to look at it as, yeah, they were going to get out of this deal one way or another, so it doesn't bother me too much. And plus, also, yes, it's a division rival.
Well, but
Edmonton's at the very pecking, like the very top of the pecking order of the Western Conference hierarchy. The Canucks have to go up a bunch of rungs to get to that point. You know what I mean?
It's part of the cost and should be factored in my opinion, given that they are a division rival. You don't want to help the front runner, like you don't want to help the favorite in your division when you can avoid it. I think. Now,
I just think it was going to get done anyways.
It was going to get done anyways. And in fact, they might have gotten a better return if not for the fact that, you know,
sure,
Kane and his agent were able to put their fingers on the scale and Kane really wanted to come home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could even say that to some extent it didn't help the Oilers as much as they might have been helped. But I think it factors in. You don't want to help a team off the mat when you can avoid it. I think that's just the truth of the matter. But I also do think we are in a new era. I mean, That Mason Marchment return for me was the real canary in the coal mine, not because Mason Marchment's not good, but because the Dallas Stars were like 50K away from the upper limit.
Yeah.
Like they weren't on the mat, they were in the mat. Like they were completely pressed up against it and they were able to get a return. And so for me anyway, that's like very telling. Like there's no free lunches in the cap growth era. Even teams that look like they're
Freddie Gaudreau.
Yeah.
Not a huge number, but three more years left for a guy who's 32.
Absolutely.
And they didn't have to pay to move that deal, right? So,
yep.
I mean, I don't know. You know, obviously there's still a class of hyper-distressed assets with, you know, significantly negative value relative to their cap hit. We haven't seen any of those move yet, so I don't know where the line is now. But the line is clearly in a lot different place than it used to be, where, as you said, like a Mason Marchment type situation, you're either getting paid to take the deal or you're giving up way less than what Seattle ultimately did.
Right. So I don't have a particular issue with that side of it, but I do think it's something that we should just, like, again, we don't have to, not to you know, subscribe to Jamie's philosophical musings of, like, what even is real knowledge? You know, like, can anything be known?
First of all, that's a great question.
Can anyone be known? Is there a fundamental truth? No, I don't want to subscribe to any of that. But I will say, like, you can factor in the cost of something into your analysis without being like, and that's why and I hate it.
And that's why it's the worst deal
right.
ever.
You yeah, know, it's yeah, like, yeah. it's like, yeah. It's part of why, like, it's part of, I think, and that's really where I come down on, right? My issue with the deal is not solely about the downside risk of the locker room fit, right? Although I think that's a perfectly fair thing to dwell on. You know, I'm not climbing Mount Bruff on that one, right? Personally, there's, you know, the idea that I think for me, the idea that I'm keep coming back to the one that I sort of am concerned about this deal from the vantage point of, does it take too much off the table in terms of how the Canucks create future value?
Yeah.
Because that's where they're stuck. Like, why are they stuck right now? Not enough tradable assets, not enough draft picks. You know, they have cap space, but not enough of it. They haven't won enough games. They haven't been good enough for all of the futures that they've sacrificed. Like, there's just so much value that this organization needs to create, and there's some avenues through which to create it. The success of the Abbotsford team, and, you know, if some of those players start to hit, like, that could be really big for this team. Lekaramäki, Volander, Elias Pettersson, the defender. Oh my goodness, that's going to happen a million times this season. You know, those guys are getting really interesting, and if they, you know, Victor Mancini too. Victor Mancini hits, plays really well across his next 150 NHL games. We could be talking about him the way we're talking about Kesselring.
Yes.
It's not likely.
No,
it's not, it's not the fat, like, part of the bell curve, but it's in the range
of
outcomes.
The people were asking about, like, what's the closest comparison to what the Canucks have put together. And it's like, if Victor Mancini spent the next 100 games producing at a half point a game level.
Yeah.
Oh. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's what we're talking about then.
And as a result of injuries, moved up the lineup and crushed that opportunity, right? So, yeah, I mean, there's various ways that this could happen. But really, for me anyway, it's like the value creation element has to be front of mind, and I just come back to the fact that there's really no way for Evander Kane to have much more value. You know, even the people who are like, well, you know, they could get something for him in a trade at the deadline, and it's like, A, I don't want to ever bet on the Canucks getting anything at the deadline, but B, there is an element to which, like, Evander Kane's not for every team.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like this is everyone wants this player for the playoffs. Like, some teams would absolutely roll it, but this is not a Brad Marchand type deal. Like, there's teams for whom he just wouldn't be a fit, and that's, you know, that makes him a trickier trade asset even from that perspective.
Well, and also, like, frankly, if you're moving him at the deadline, and first of all, as we said on the show yesterday, you should never just, like, factor that in to a Canucks signing, because as we've seen time after time after time, it's not that simple with this team. But if you are, it's like, well, your season hasn't been successful. So it's like, okay, great, trade him for a third-round pick or whatever at the deadline, or a second, but it's hard to be too excited about the way you chose to allocate $5 million of cap space in that scenario if you then go out and end up as sellers at the deadline. It's like, okay, it's a nice way to recoup some value, but it's still hard to look at it as a success in that situation. This text comes in. Hey, guys, in my mind, it isn't that Kane is a bad pickup. It's just the timing of the trade. We aren't a great team. We're a bubble team. We will get in with goaltending and a Petey bounce back. Maybe they want to show Hughes that we can win around. And he says, I'm concerned we are exactly smack dab in the middle of the Benning era. Feels like it for sure. I wouldn't go that far at the end, but I do think that idea of just the type of team where it makes sense to bet on Evander Kane, like, I think he made a ton of sense for the Oilers, and he showed his utility for the Oilers.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And
this is a really good point.
The Oilers have McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, so they've got, like, two of the guys at the absolute top of the pecking order in the NHL that, like, you cannot be in the NHL and not massively respect and follow what those guys are doing, just because they're so productive regular season, and they're absolute dogs in the playoffs as well. So you've got a situation where you've got this incredibly strong leadership group, and it feels weird talking about them that way, because I don't know if we think about them as, like, the public flashy leaders, but just by virtue of being as dedicated and great as they are, they're a really strong leadership group. So you've got that in place, and then you've got, as I was saying yesterday on the show, maybe the two best play drivers in the NHL in McDavid and Draisaitl for Evander Kane to ride shotgun with. That is the situation where if you're like, hey, we're a team that has those high upside guys in place, and we need to build out the rest of our roster to give us the best chance possible in the playoffs with a guy who brings that edge and who brings that swagger and that physicality. I think Evander Kane makes all the sense in the world, right? Like, oh, we've got the room to insulate him. We've got the players he can complement. We know we're going to be a playoff team, or at least we have a very, very high degree of confidence we're going to be a playoff team. I think it makes all the sense in the world for a team like that. Like the Vegas Golden Knights. If Evander Kane went to the Vegas Golden Knights, I'd be like, oh boy, he's going to be scary. He's going to have a great season, and he's going to have big playoff moments for them. Like, yeah. There's no doubt about it in my mind. You know what I mean? Because I know he has that in him. Is he going to get a chance to do that here? Does the right leadership group and does the right personnel around him on the ice exist to make it worth it? That's my big question with the Evander Kane acquisition. I think that's what the texture's getting at. It's like, it's not about him as a player. It's about where the team sits in their kind of trajectory and in the hierarchy of the NHL.
I think that's such a good contextual point, right? I like the Evander Kane fit a lot more as an OTT piece, right? Like an over-the-top finishing piece.
Yes.
As opposed to for a team that, you know, I think needs to be focused more on creating that long-term value, which is, you know, very much in line with 4 years worth of what I've been talking about on this program. So for me, that's sort of how he fits into this, and whether he does or not, right? Because that's really the other part of this is, does this make sense? I think it does from a cost, you know, the cost of acquisition is totally fine. Fourth round pick, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the cap space. It's the opportunity cost. It's the idea that there's no conventional solution in my mind to sort of the rut that the Canucks have found themselves in, partly as a result of what this management group inherited and partly as a result of sort of how they navigated the characters involved, culminating in what occurred last year, which severely weakened this team's, you know, short-term position. Like, let's be real, right? Like, this replacing JT Miller is a multi-year exercise at best.
Yes, indeed.
You know?
I'm hearing that we are going to hear from Evander Kane soon. Slight delay here, but stay with us. He's going to speak to the media. Hopefully in the next couple of minutes here, we'll get it going at Rogers Arena. In the meantime, we can continue to go in to the Dunbar Lumber inbox. 650-650 is the number. Chet in Burnaby texts in, with the Canucks having only $7-ish million to spend, do you think they'll have to pivot to B or C class one-dimensional free agents like Olofsson or Skinner? I wouldn't actually mind Olofsson. He's fun. That's from Chet and Burnaby.
Also, Orin Skoldzvik.
There you go.
He hails from, you know, one of that storied town with its deep
Sweden.
Canucks. Yeah, yeah, Vancouverville, Sweden. Exactly right.
I got to go there sometime.
Yeah, me too, actually. It'd be sick.
I think that'd be awesome.
Eat at Naslund and Forsberg's restaurant.
Oh, that'd be incredible. Yeah. Are you kidding me? That'd be fantastic.
Go in the summer is, I think, what the Ovik crowd will tell you.
Absolutely. I do find the question of the, like, down market potential free agency targets interesting one for the Canucks, and that's more likely if they don't end up getting Rossi, because if they get Rossi, it's like you're really limited.
Depends what they send out
depends what the deal looks like too, right?
I'll say,
like,
this
the contract, I mean,
I'll say this too, like, the thing I'm most interested in seeing this Alvin Rutherford front office do is, like, who you sign in on July 2nd through August 15th. Like, that's their wheelhouse, baby.
Yeah.
That's like, what can the Canucks do that I'm most excited to see? It's those value signings. It's the Sherwood tier guys. It's the, you know, Ian Cole tier guys. It's the Pugh Suter tier guys. Like, they've reliably been able to graft value onto their roster in sort of the less heralded parts of unrestricted free agency. Now, with the cap growth era incoming, the price of those bets is going up, but we can discuss it after we hear from Kane.
All right, here is Evander Kane.
Just your thoughts about coming home here, and what does it mean to you and your family to be a Vancouver Canuck right now?
Yeah, really exciting. Obviously, first I'd like to thank Mr. Aquilini, Jim, Patrick, and Footer for bringing me in. I think, it's a good opportunity for me to play at home in front of my family. I think, having the Oilers kind of work with me to go to a place that I wanted to be, and I think that would fit well for my family, was nice of them, and just really excited to be a Canuck.
How excited are you to just be able to bring your style of game and being hard to play against? I know that's something that Adam Foote's talked about a lot, from wanting to see that from his players. Just being a guy who's hard to play against, how much do you take pride in that?
Yeah, I mean, I've played that style ever since I was 8 years old here in Vancouver. So nothing's going to change. Nothing's really changed when it comes to, you know, how I play and what I bring on the ice. You know, I'm very confident in what I can do, and I think Vancouver is going to provide me a really good opportunity to do that.
Hey, Evander, Randy Janda from Sportsnet 650. You've played this team plenty over the years. What kind of team are you joining, and have you seen them from the other side?
Yeah, well, I mean, we obviously didn't play all of this past season, but we played them a couple of years ago in the playoffs, and, you know, we had struggled with them throughout the entire regular season as well. So, you know, they're a tough team to play. They work really hard. You know, they got some great guys in the back end, obviously with Hughes leading the way back there. So, you know, excited to join this group. I don't know a whole lot of the guys. I think I only know Mizey from the past. So looking forward to getting to know everybody and getting integrated with the group.
On that note, have you had a chance to have a conversation with Adam Foote? What do you know about him as a coach?
We've texted back and forth. He's on a fishing trip right now. So I think he had some bad service, but I think we're planning to get together this weekend at some point.
Hi, Evander. Yep. Ian, used to know me from the Vancouver Sun. I now work for Sportsnet.
Is that when you were friendlier?
I'm always me, I guess. So Patrick Alvin told us yesterday when he talked to you, you had the kids at the swimming pool. Mm-hmm. How excited are your kids to be around family and grandma and granddad more often?
Yeah, no, you, that's a very friendly question. Thank you. Yeah, no, they're really, really excited to get to spend some more time with grandma and grandpa. You know, it was fortunate that we were in Edmonton, so we weren't too far away. So they were able to see them more often than they would have been if we were playing elsewhere. But, you know, to be able to come back home and have some family and friends around with having four kids definitely makes it a little easier on myself. So that'll be fun for them.
And I think it's another friendly one. Did you have that suit made in the last 24 hours with Canuck colors?
That's what Jim just asked me, actually. And I said, no, I actually had this in my closet. And when I was planning on coming here, I wasn't planning on packing it. But, you know, I said, I got to wear this for the interview. So it worked out well.
And just one follow-up to the suit. Patrick also said yesterday, he doesn't care how you dress. He doesn't care how you arrive at the rink, as long as you perform on the ice and obey team rules. I think he said, you feel like they're willing to embrace you and let you be you with this team.
Yeah. I mean, I think you saw that in Edmonton. I mean, and with regards to what I wear, what I drive in during the playoffs, you know, they're very nice suits. So you don't like really nice suits and you want to see me coming in looking like a slob, I mean, I can do that too if you want. So, yeah, no, I think, you know, everybody seemed incredibly welcoming. They want to have me here, which is a nice feeling. And, you know, when you feel wanted, you want to perform at your best. So I'm looking forward to hopefully doing that on the ice.
Hey, Evander, Jeff Patterson from the Nation Network. 900 hard games in the NHL, 100 more in the playoffs. You're going to be 34 in August. I'm just wondering what a missed regular season did for the body. And I know you're rehabbing some things, but like, how good did you feel when you got the green light to get out and play in the playoffs?
Yeah, no, obviously the following year I was dealing with a lot of different stuff. That was difficult, and being able to get my body right, have the surgeries I had and get back to 100% was a nice kind of reset for me. Obviously missing the whole year and having to jump into the playoffs is never easy, but, you know, I kind of drew on my experience from the year before playing hurt, thinking about, well, if I feel a lot better on the ice, even though I'm haven't played, I think I can contribute in a positive way. And, you know, was happy I was able to do that. And I think, you know, for me, the time off and getting healthy has kind of allowed me to roll the clock back a little bit, in my opinion. And I think hopefully that can translate onto the ice.
And you've probably done this at other times in your career, but this is a contract year. What sort of motivations come along with being in the final year of a contract?
Yeah, I've never heard so many people talk about a contract year when it comes to me, when there's so many other guys in contract years, it's just incredible. I know I bring a lot of attention to a room and to a press conference, and especially in a Canadian market, and it's great. But, I think every year I've ever played in the National Hockey League, I've always wanted to put my best foot forward and work as hard as I possibly could. And I don't think anybody can question that. And this year is going to be no different.
Hey, Vander, Patrick Johnston from the Province and the Sun. Your off-ice story is well-documented. There's been a lot there.
It's well-documented in a way where, it's there's not all the information. There's some inaccuracies and there's some...
What I was going to say was it hasn't been a thing at all. There hasn't been discussion about any of that since you got to Edmonton. Feels like you've matured quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Is that your feeling? Are you a new guy from, who you were 10 years ago?
Am I a new guy? No. I'm the same guy. I think, if you're not improving in all aspects of your life, you're probably not where you want to be. And I don't think there's anybody in this room that isn't better off or have learned from their mistakes or learned from positive experiences to make them better moving forward. So for me, I think it's, Edmonton was great. Edmonton brought me into their organization and like I said earlier, embraced me. And, the city kind of fell in love with me and I kind of fell in love with the city. And we had a lot of on-ice success as well. So it was a great experience. And I'm hoping that can continue here in Vancouver coming back home.
And how much did becoming a father? I mean, becoming a father, we all know, changes you. I mean, how's that?
Well, yeah, I think, anybody who has kids understands that, they automatically jump up to be the number one priority in your life, and any good parent anyways. And, for me, that was no different. So, I have four of them. They're all very young and they're all very excited to cheer dad on.
Hi, Evander. Ben Milger with CTV News. When you look back at some of the off-ice trials and tribulations, can you talk about how they may have humbled you as a person over the years?
I don't know if humbled is the right word. I think what it has shown is my character. I think, character is a word that likes to get tossed out very casually. It can be often used as a weapon when describing somebody. And I think, what real character is somebody who shows you who they are when there's scrutiny and adversity, and how they handle that. And I think, obviously there's been some difficult times for myself, but I think I've come out of it better off and better for it. And I think, you learn and you grow each and every year. And for me, that's no different.
When you combine some of that stuff with your on-ice personality, you play with a grit and an intensity. For some people around the league, they might look at you as a bit of an NHL villain. Certainly, some in the Canucks fandom saw you that way while you're in Edmonton and some of the other teams. Are you at all worried about how Canucks fans might embrace you now that you've come back home?
Well, I think as an opposing player, if the fan base views you that way, I think that's, you're probably doing something right. The worst thing I think anybody could say to somebody is when they're playing against them, or I really enjoy playing against you. That would not be a compliment in my book. So, I think Vancouver, I go back to 2 years ago, this was probably one of the loudest buildings I've ever played in, game seven. So the fan base here is fantastic. They're passionate. They love their hockey. I was a young kid growing up watching Marcus Naslin and the Sedins and Todd Bertuzzi and Donald Brashear and on and on, cheering for him. So, I have a lot of friends that I grew up with that have always been Canucks fans. And, I know what hockey means in this city, and I know what the Canucks mean to the people here. So I'm really privileged and honored to be a part of that.
Hey, Evander, Barry DeLay from Global BC, used to interview in New York, the Giants. Anyway, I know you're coming to a new team, but you've been in the league a long time, been through a lot. Do you feel that part of your job description here is to be a leader, and what do you do as a leader?
For sure. I think, I'm going into year 17. Obviously, I have a ton of experience. And I think, you know, my experiences can add a lot of value because they're not all pretty. And I think when you go through different things on and off the ice, you know, you can lend those lessons to some of the younger guys and some other guys that are maybe struggling with things. And I think just being mentally tough, especially in a Canadian market, can be important and it can be difficult when you're not used to it. So I think leadership is something that I've always tried to do and lead by example, especially on the ice. And I think that's going to be important moving forward as well.
The dressing room camaraderie, or just the in there, it wasn't the greatest in Vancouver this year, obviously, very public. In Edmonton, maybe what did you learn from that room that you bring over here to maybe to make it a more cohesive room?
Yeah, I don't obviously you hear about it as a player around the league, but you know, I'm not gonna speculate or try to figure out what happened in years past. I think, you know, from talking to some of the guys yesterday on the team, you know, they feel that they have a great group of guys and a great room, and they're excited to have me, and I'm excited to be a part of that. And I think sometimes things can get taken out of context. Again, I don't know all the details of what has happened in the past year, but you know, I think having obviously a good room is important, but also understanding that, you know, you put 25 grown men in a room, not everybody's going to be best friends. And I think, you know, just like any workplace, you know, you have to be able to get along and respect each other. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about what you do on the ice. And I think this group is poised to have a bounce back year.
Who were some of the guys you talked to yesterday?
I'm going to keep those conversations private. I talked to a couple of the guys, and yeah, I think there's a good feeling around this team, as much as, you know, the outside noise might say otherwise. So that was nice to hear.
It's not often you get to play back-to-back Stanley Cup Finals.
Yep.
What do you bring from that? What did you learn? What can you share with these guys about that experience, what that means, what you need?
Yeah, I mean, obviously winning in this league, in my opinion, is the hardest thing to do. You know, getting so close back-to-back seasons and not getting it done is, you know, probably understated here, but very disappointing. It's hard to move on from. It's something you're probably never going to forget. At the same time, in order to get to that point, you got to do a lot of winning. And the last, sort of my 4 years in Edmonton, we did a lot of that. And it's something I was used to before I got to the NHL too, is winning championships. And I think, you know, anytime any player steps on the ice, that's the intent. And for me, I think being able to bring experience on how you win in the playoffs, because it is very different than the regular season. And you see that with teams that have great regular seasons and then maybe falter a little earlier than people expect in the postseason. So, and the style of hockey is much different. And the type of goals that are scored, you know, it really doesn't translate a whole lot from the regular season to the postseason. I think those are some of the key things that, you know, when you go that deep, you really pick up on.
Sure. You're such a young player when you won a Memorial Cup with the Vancouver Giants here. Does that just seem like a lifetime ago, or does that still resonate with you? Is that, do you still think about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you add up the number of years and you hear it out loud, it seems like a really long time ago. But you remember it like it was yesterday, whether it was winning the Memorial Cup or even getting drafted by the Giants. You know, those are great memories. Ron Toigo's done a great job of continuously bringing that team together over the years. And I think we're having another 25-year anniversary golf tournament next week. So, you know, those are fun memories. I've had great memories in Vancouver playing hockey, and I hope there's more to come.
And did that inform your desire or shape your desire to come back, some of those memories?
Yeah, I think that played a part of it for sure. Obviously family, proximity, you know, and I think obviously coming to a team who wants to win. You know, this ownership group and this management group, they want to win, and they want to win now. And I think, you know, again, playing against them in the playoffs this year or 2 years ago, it was one game away, and maybe they're in the cup final. So, you know, I don't think we're too far off. Obviously, you have a superstar defenseman. You know, you have an incredibly talented forward and Elias Pettersson, and you know, those are exciting people that you have the prospect of playing with. So I'm excited.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, that is the newest Vancouver Canuck, Evander Kane, speaking to the media. And as we said, there's probably some more curiosity in this one than there is for a typical new acquisition press conference. And I think you saw that play out there with some interesting moments, some funny moments, some back and forth with the media, some of whom remember asking him questions when he was with the Giants, and some of whom, I guess, he didn't think IMAC was friendly. IMAC's always been friendly as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised by that. I think it was just a joke.
I think so. A lot of interesting moments there, but we do have to go to break, and we will be joined by Jason Bukala next to talk NHL draft and the offseason for the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Mobile Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. And now joining us on the hotline, one of our favorites here on the show from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he is Jason Bukala. Books, sorry about the delay there, man. What's going on?
Oh, not much. Just, you know, getting ready in LA here for the big weekend. It's definitely different. Not the convention style that we've been accustomed to in the past, but nonetheless, we are heading over to the Peacock Theater. It's probably the only time I'll be awarded a fake Oscar in the theater, right? Something to do. And we're going to get after it here.
Just make sure you don't take too long thanking everyone in your speech.
Yeah, so I want
to play the music.
I want you to know, Boogs, I believe in you. If you want to win an Oscar, I believe in you.
An EGOT, why not?
Just put your mind to it, bud. You can get there.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So I'll lots of drafts. Best supporting actor.
That's right.
I believe in you, man.
lots of draft stuff to get to here, but we got to start with the man we just heard from, which is Evander Kane. Traded from the Oilers to the Canucks yesterday, fourth-round pick going the other way. And then we said off the top of the show today, after reacting yesterday, you know, a very, very polarizing deal by the Vancouver Canucks for a very polarizing player. How do you see this acquisition by the Canucks?
Yeah, same. Very polarizing. As a matter of fact, I don't like it, guys. I'm not in love with this. I understand I understand the strategy. I understand the want. I understand the need. I understand all of it from a hockey perspective. What I don't understand is how we're trying to reestablish a culture in the dressing room that went completely off the rails last year. And we bring in a player who, by all accounts, was really good in Edmonton off the ice, culture-wise. But that was a different dressing room, wasn't it? Like, the leadership there and the way that team was trending, it's just different than what Vancouver's got going on right now. And I'm curious about the acquisition. The cost wasn't all that dear in terms of draft capital, but that's not the point. Taking on the full freight of the contract, and then for me, the bad days are, you know, they can really go off the rails with this individual. And I'm not trying to, you know, throw darts at somebody here, but that's just the history. And so from a culture perspective, I'm not over the moon about this.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, Books. And, you know, my biggest issue, even beyond the culture stuff with the deal, is, you know, I think we saw what he could do as a complementary piece in Edmonton. And, of course, they've got, you know, two of the best, maybe the two best forwards in the league in McDavid and Draisaitl. But here in Vancouver, I mean, we're still kind of looking for who's going to be those pillars, those driving forces, the guys who can really, you know, drive play and help everyone else. And I'm not sure what, even just from an on-ice perspective, how much does Evander Kane help your team if you don't have those players that he can ride shotgun with?
Yeah, again, not sure. He's going to be highly motivated. He's going into last year of his contract. He's always kept himself in great shape, fitness-wise. You know, he's obviously had some injury setbacks. But again, you know, the team doesn't know what version of Elias Pettersson we're going to get right now, or if that's going to be, you know, does he return? I'm assuming right now he's returning, let's see what happens this weekend. And I don't get the fit. I don't understand the fit on so many different levels. So I guess my baseline expectation was I would hope that he would score 20. I hope that he would add that power element that he definitely can do when he's playing to the best of his abilities. There's no question he's an imposing figure. But you know, at the cost of the freight, you know, at over $5 million, I just don't know. Like, I've thought about this long and hard for the last 24 hours. I'm trying to be as positive as I possibly can. I'm hopeful that it works. I really am. But there's just so much risk here for me, and I personally would not have recommended it, and I would have been shopping somewhere else in the league. For example, I don't know this for a fact. I'm just spitballing, but these are the types of things I would have brought up in our war room. Like, you know, what's going on in Utah with Lawson Krause, for example? Okay, I know he's got term and he's a lot younger or whatever, but what's going on with a guy like that? You know, what's going on in Buffalo before the trade that they made with Utah? You know, is there something out there that we can do differently? And perhaps they've done all of the above. I'm sure they have. They're trying a lot of different things. This one here would have been at the bottom of the barrel for me in terms of strategy.
When I sort of stack it all up, right, and, you know, Evander Kane comes into this situation where you've got, you know, a lot of speculation around Quinn Hughes' future. You've got Elias Pettersson with an awful lot to prove. You've got questions. If Demko's extended, every time Adam Foote makes a start decision, it's going to be second-guessed by 2 million head coaches in the Vancouver market, right? And then you've got the rookie head coach who's never been a professional head coach at any level. And I just sort of look at it and think, man, this feels like a pretty volatile situation from a downside risk perspective. And it's almost like that context, Books, that gives me pause more than Kane himself.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I really can't. You build out the structure and your philosophy and hopefully your culture from the upper management to the coach, and then with what you have in your leadership group already with Quinn Hughes, for example, and I would say Pettersson on the back end. You mentioned Demko there. This is curious, isn't it, guys? Because Shelovs is coming off MVP performance in Abbotsford. And by the way, let me give a shout out to Manny Malhotra. Like, what a job. Like, come on.
Yeah,
what a hell of a job he did here. Like, you got to imagine, we've all been there before where we haven't been, where we've been in line to, we're qualified for a job. We interview for a job. We don't get the job. But now he's got to regroup and be the best version of himself as a coach. Isn't that the true version of a pure pro when he goes back there and he gets the result out of that room that he got? So it's not going to be too long before he gets a head coaching job. And I'm wondering right now, as I sit here today, if the Dallas Stars aren't reaching out for permission. But anyways, I digress. The culture has got to be established from upper management, trickle down to your coach, and then, you know, you got to be able to get the best version out of what you already have. Like, JT Miller went out the door, okay? And, like, Evander Kane on his very worst day, like, JT Miller, he's super competitive kid, and he's not for everybody, or player, and he's not for everybody, I get it. But, oh, my God, like, Evander Kane, historically, again, his worst days, if you think JT Miller was ordinary, like this guy can be a real pain in the ass. So it's really curious to me, guys. It really is.
All right, we're back. A little bonus commercial. commercial bonus mini segment here to wrap up the show on Canucks Talk. Hey, it happens when you're live on location sometime. Someone just texted in. It was that was a Drance pause so long. 6:50 goes to commercial. No, what happened is on our end, Books was giving an answer. He dropped out, and I immediately jumped into my normal. We just lost the guest routine. We'll reconnect momentarily. Yada yada yada. Take care of some business, et cetera, et cetera.
Turns out we had been dropped.
And then I heard John Shorthouse's voice for Sanson Associates in my ears. I was like, that's not supposed to be happening right now. So we dropped, and rather than press Jason Bukala, our pal, into tap dancing by himself while he figured out the connection, Arash wisely went to commercials. So,
especially because it's draft week, like Books has bigger fish to fry.
Now that, like, Books would have done it because he's an absolute beauty, but that is too much to ask of a valued guest. 100%. Like Jason Bukala.
I just want to chime in very quickly.
No, we did not do that.
Definitely thought it was a Drance pause.
A record-setting Drance pause.
Fair enough.
All right. What I was taking care of, but nobody was hearing, was reminding everyone that we are live on location at the Andrew Sherritt in Richmond, where the big Milwaukee event is happening today. And, again, you can come down. You can check out Milwaukee's latest gear. You can see some live demos, explore cutting-edge tool technology, and take advantage of exclusive one-day-only deals and special offers. Plus, if you spend $50 or more, gourmet grilled cheese sandwich from the Say Cheese food truck free on Andrew Sherritt. So come on down. We're wrapping up here in a few minutes, but the event continues at the Andrew Sherritt in Richmond. I believe there's free chips and free drinks available as well. So make sure you get in to the Andrew Sherritt in Richmond if you can. All right, we got a few minutes left here. Again, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can send your thoughts in for these final few minutes here on the show. But, I mean, really, we're going into draft day in L.A. tomorrow. Now, it doesn't get going until after our show will be off the air, so we still got 24 hours plus here to see what unfolds. But the deadline on that 15th overall pick, I mean, what? It's been burning a hole in their pocket since the season wrapped up, presumably. Everything we've heard and everything we continue to hear is solely about how motivated they are to deal that pick, and we're into crunch time now. Now, look, 28 hours is an eternity at this time of the NHL calendar? Like, so many different things could unfold. So many things already have unfolded over the last 28 hours.
Like another big trade. Yeah. Columbus receives Brendan Gaunce from Minnesota for Cameron Butler. So an ex-Canuck on the move.
Another ex-Canuck.
Rack him up.
I was a big.
It's the silly season. We told you it would be wild out there.
I was a big Brendan Gaunce. I was a big Brendan Gaunce believer back in the day.
Oh yeah, I mean, one of my favorite.
I thought they had something there.
My favorite Brendan Gaunce story is still that year where they like sold hard at the deadline, and because he was like such a no event player, he ended up in the top 10, plus minus, and earned a Schedule A bonus. like Brendan Gaunce earning a couple hundred K for like a minus two season is so good.
It's incredible. Shout out to Brendan Gaunce. And he continues his career now going to the Columbus Blue Jackets, back to the Columbus Blue Jackets organization.
Yeah.
They did 1 year, I think, away of without Brendan Gaunce in the organization.
And they said, like, enough of this.
This is a mistake.
Yeah.
We got to get him back in.
Well, he was always a very bright guy, right?
What were we thinking?
You're going to – you know, he's going to have a long career, I'd assume, after his playing days are done and doing something related to hockey, because he's a very bright young man.
Absolutely. What was the, like,
I guess he's not that young anymore.
What was the that era of Canucks draft pick that, like, you had the highest, that you feel most burned by? You know what I mean? So I'm talking, like, well, I mean, Cody Hodgson, but that's, like, a different strat.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. It is Cody Hodgson.
That almost was, like, the default answer, but, like,
1,000%.
The run of, from, like, Hodgson, Schrader, Jensen, Gaunce.
Yeah, yeah. No, but my
it's just like, come on.
My problem is, man, my problem is, to be totally honest with you, is, like, I long ago became, you'll see this with young hockey writers. Like, if you watch or follow younger hockey writers, guys who are like 20, guys or women who are 21, 22, they'll write about prospects like they've got this great shot. And then 10 years on, you're like, oh man, I've seen so many guys not make it. So many players, the attrition rate is just so high.
Yeah.
Or a player makes it and then, you know, but they're just kind of like a replacement level player. You know, they make it, but they're kind of nothing. Mm-hmm. At least they don't move the needle. And that's when you sort of realize that, you know, having takes about players outside the NHL being better than players inside the NHL, like, you know, like Zach Benson versus Tom Volander takes, is just going to age badly on you. You know what I mean? Like, the NHL is so good. How much of the American League final did you watch?
I watched a fair amount of it. Yeah.
But, like, as you know, it really does reinforce just how incredible NHL players are.
Yes.
Like, they really are unbelievable athletes. And, you know, when you have a chance to be around it and understand just how ridiculous, like, the guys that fans don't even like. You know, like, the third line depth guy who struggles to finish breakaway chances. The fact that he's getting breakaway chances in the NHL is amazing. It means he's amazing. Right? And once you sort of really understand that, I think your enthusiasm about prospects gets muted pretty significantly.
Yeah, it does. After the heartbreaks accumulate and a bunch of people texting you.
But Hodgson's the last one.
Oh, man. I was so all in on Cody
Hodgson.
As you should. Like,
his profile was incredible.
Yeah, there was nothing
incredible.
Like, incorrect about that. It just didn't work out. But, like, he had an incredible draft plus one year.
I mean, he had an extraordinarily rare disorder. You know, and in time we learned that was a massive issue. It's just we had no understanding of what he was dealing with.
All right, that's the show for today. Thank you to everyone for sticking with us. A shout out to Jason Bukla as well for joining us. And we will be back tomorrow on NHL Draft Day, round one. Will the Canucks still be holding the 15th overall pick when we reconvene on the air tomorrow? We'll find out. Make sure you tune in here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.